You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
I oftentimes find myself 15 minutes into a conversation with someone starting a new nonprofit, and I say, stop. I'm with you. I believe in your mission. You don't have to convince me anymore. Now let's talk. How are you going to pull this thing off?
We are at the City Gospel Movement podcast, and we are thrilled to have in the studio today Steve Moore, who's the executive director of the Murdoch Trust here in the Pacific Northwest. Welcome, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
As you can tell, Steve is not from the Northwest because he's got a bit of a Texas draw to his voice. But Steve, I would just love to have you bring us up to speed on the Murdoch Trust and how it got started, and just kind of a little bit of background on yourself as well.
Yeah. The Murdoch Trust was created from the estate of Jack Murdoch, who was an early tech entrepreneur in the Northwest, helped create what's called the Silicon Forest of the Northwest, and was instrumental with an organization called Tektronix and taking it public. In his will, he said, if anything ever happens to me, I want the whole of my estate to go to be created a trust that will nurture and enrich the educational, cultural, social, and spiritual life of individuals, families, and communities. So that's our mission. That's what we do. He died unexpectedly in a plane crash in the early 70s. Hmm. The trust was launched in 75. And as you said, we've worked with about 7,000 nonprofit organizations around primarily the Northwest, but around the country.
And Steve, you came from a background of academics and university. Can you walk us through kind of working for different universities and then how this kind of transferred into working for the Murdoch Foundation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think probably the key takeaway that would be helpful for people to know is I never planned to be doing this. And I think that's one of the amazing ways that things happen, that God weaves things together in ways that we never can imagine.
Amen.
And there's a lot of small things that I could talk about that are related to that. But I began to realize that really, there were four streams of my life. One stream was raising up leaders and working with the formation of leaders. Another was really trying to understand how does faith best engage culture in a way that is transformative and helpful and redemptive. I think a third was the fact that ideas matter. Ideas have consequences. They work out in different ways. Bad ideas can have very bad consequences. Good ideas can have very great consequences. And so ideas matter. That was another thing. And then the other thing is the importance of what I would call mentoring and development in all of our lives and the way in which we all are formed in community, whether you're a person of faith or not. We're not in isolation. We are formed in community and by the world that we live in and friends that we have. And so understanding those kinds of things, I think, were always a part of my life. I taught in colleges and universities and also worked in administration, was fortunate to be at some great schools. I got pulled to the Northwest.
Which you love, right?
Love it. And, we came and worked for 10 years at Seattle Pacific University. And that was really part of what pulled us to the Northwest and had just a great experience, but also worked at Baylor University and at Asbury Seminary. And really just each one were in their own way just amazing parts of our story that we're very grateful for.
Yeah, it's if you could imagine while you were at Baylor that you would be doing this, you probably wouldn't have said that would have been your future.
Yeah.
But I think that's such a critical thing is to just keep moving.
Yeah.
And God will kind of open the door to the next thing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And in a sense, be open. I think you have to be open and be and to put on the kind of heart and mind that we're willing to listen and to hear. And
yeah.
I think, you know, sometimes I was good at that. Sometimes I was not good at that. But fortunately, there were times that the Lord really spoke and led in ways that were incredibly helpful.
So what made you want to make the jump from kind of a longstanding academic career? You were oftentimes in high leadership positions mm-hmm. in these universities and move into this role at Murdoch.
I think that it was a combination of things. I think one was the realization that working at the Murdoch Trust would give us an opportunity to engage and encounter a wide variety of leaders. We work with some leaders that are from faith-based organizations, some that are not.
Mm-hmm.
But also to kind of weave the fabric of the culture in a way that is redemptive and that really serves individuals and families and communities. And to also bring together those various streams of my life that had been present mm-hmm. in a unique way. What we often say is we kind of work upstream because we're working with leaders and with organizations. And our greatest goal is to help organizations and the people that are a part of them to better fulfill their mission and to help them, in a sense, serve and bring that mission to life. That's our ultimate goal.
Well, and I think that's something that's really unique, wouldn't you say, about the Murdoch Trust is that it's not just a here's the check and hope it all goes well kind of organization, right? That you guys really do come alongside. And I even read something where you guys were top fifth or sixth in the country of foundations that really collaborate with the people that you fund. I would love to just hear your perspective
yeah.
on that and kind of what the philosophy is that from at Murdoch.
Yeah. It's a great question. It's kind of unique, I think, to our ethos and the fact that our trustees are committed to us being an interactive foundation. So there are foundations that are proactive. They think up a great idea and then they try to go get somebody to go do it and they'll give them the money. Say, go do that idea that I have. There are foundations that are reactive and they just kind of sit back and if a good idea happens to come their way, then they'll fund it. We sort of want to be interactive. So through all of our processes, our goal is that we will help organizations ask the kind of questions, make the space for to do the kind of thinking that will help them execute their mission in the very best way possible, build their capacity to fulfill their promise that they're making by the mission that they claim to have. And so we do that through programs. We do that through our grants. We do that through convenings. We do that through partnerships and the variety of different ways that we seek to fulfill that.
So this is even pre-funding.
Yes.
You're coming in and
yes.
coming, almost helping them through like a business model or a business plan kind of thinking through execution.
Yes. And one of the things I would say is that, you know, we're not a big foundation. We have a great team of people. But all this is on our website. We put all the questions that we are going to ask an organization, that's all up on our website. There's a page, a link that you can go to called Writing Great Grants. And it has all of the different questions that we're going to ask. Because what often happens is organizations are so busy doing the work, they don't take the time to really ask themselves the kind of questions that they need to ask. What would a great board for our organization look like? What would be a way that we need to be listening in our community? Just important kinds of questions. And so we provide those. There's some videos that are up on our website that actually give some coaching and some instruction. There's a whole variety of kinds of things that we can talk about as we go along. But that's some of what we're about.
Yeah. So just so that we don't forget at the end of this, what is the website for people so they can jot it down right now?
Yeah. So it's just murdochtrust.org. So you just go to the web and do murdochtrust.org, and you'll find the Murdoch Trust. It's the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust, not to be confused with Rupert Murdoch, which is spelled with an H, of a different kind of emphasis, or other. The name Murdoch pops up in other kinds of ways, but this is MURDOCK.
So murdochtrust.org.
Yep.
Awesome. So, you know, one of the things, I come out of the tech background and the startup space, and, you know, oftentimes in that environment, you're asked, well, what's your funding strategy?
Yep.
Right? And are you fundable? And you're usually getting asked those questions by venture capitalists who are wanting their money in 18 months, 3x. And so, you know, for a lot of people who are listening today, they are either have started their own nonprofit or they're thinking about starting it. And one of our biggest questions is sustainable funding models.
Yes.
And so, you know, working with a foundation, when people come to you, kind of what are some of the first things that you help them think through in this beginning phases of even thinking about starting a nonprofit?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's a couple of things I would say. My dad used to say, everyone who's ever taken a shower has had a great idea.
Amen.
But it's the people that get out of the shower and have a plan and execute it that actually get something done.
That's awesome.
And one of the things that we often find is that people come into our office and they want to sell us on that mission, their vision and their mission, and they're passionate. And what I would say is that probably in our culture, and particularly in our Christian culture, we have oversold passion and transparency. And we've probably undersold discipleship and hard work. And those have to be brought together in order for something to come to life. I oftentimes find myself 15 minutes into a conversation with someone starting a new nonprofit, mm-hmm. and I say, stop. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I believe in your mission. You don't have to convince me anymore. Now let's talk, how are you going to pull this thing off?
Right, the back end piece.
And they're shocked by that because they think, if I can just get you to believe in my vision, then you'll just start writing me checks. But that's not the way that we operate. It's not the way most donors really want to operate. Mm-hmm. You'll find donors that will give just a vision. But really, ultimately, it's like venture investors. They're venture, you know, investors in nonprofits.
Right.
And you want them as partners. They want to know that you will deliver on the promise that you're making.
So let's talk about that just a little bit, because I think that's really critical. And oftentimes, not necessarily the gifting of the person who is so passionate about something, right? I always say that you can spot a city movement leader because they believe their city can be transformed. Mm-hmm. Like, they passionately believe that and are willing to lay it down on the line for that. One of the challenges then is in the execution. And so I would love to kind of just hear, so when somebody comes in and they're super passionate and you stop them, how do you help them kind of think through that next phase that they need to then maybe come back with, right?
Yeah, I think that one of the key things is to coach people to ask themselves the right questions. A very important question is this: who's your team? Because you've got to have some people around you. It doesn't have to be a big team. It doesn't have to all be a paid team. And then what's in your toolbox? You know what you're good at? But do you have people that can help you with what you're not good at? And that oftentimes is the key to success. Sometimes leaders are unwilling to recognize that they need anyone around them, particularly entrepreneurial startup mm-hmm. kinds of folks. They're unwilling to say, I need some folks to help me around this. That's the role of boards often in nonprofits. It's the role of, you know, volunteers and engaging people in meaningful ways. I think the other thing is that the number of times I've had somebody come in and say to me, there is no one else doing what I'm going to do. No one else doing that. And I said, really? What that usually tells me is that they've not done their homework.
Yeah.
Because generally there are other people that are doing it. So then you have to ask the question, is what you're going to do really that different or needed? Or does it crowd the landscape? Are there ways that maybe, you know, you can bring the entrepreneurial insight and spirit to what you're doing to an organization that needs new life or that may actually already be doing something? Are you willing and able to learn from someone who's actually doing what you're doing, but doing it in Boise, Idaho, or doing it in Dallas, Texas, or in Waco, or in, you know, Lexington, or wherever it may be?
Yeah. No, I think that's so critical, because there's so many pitfalls with that, right? That you're potentially taking funding away from another organization, you're doubling down on things, it gets confusing for the recipients on how to know how to manage these multiple nonprofits in the same space.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is tricky. So the you know, the rule of doing your homework, right, in mm-hmm. addition to the passion, mm-hmm. it sounds like, is really where the sweet spot is.
Yeah. And one of the, another key question that we often ask is the question, how would you know if your vision, your mission got fulfilled? Now, the problem is lots of people get preoccupied with metrics. Metrics are good, but they are only a small part of assessing effectiveness and effective fulfillment of a mission. So when somebody says, we led 74,000 people in the prayer to receive Christ, we want to say, and then what happened? Because there are other ways of assessing whether they did that in order to get the lunch that was promised after the service was over, or some other kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
So assessment is the word that we like to use. How will you assess? How will you know? What are the ways that you will know that mission has been accomplished? And oftentimes people have not really thought that through and how they will then go about doing that. That's an important question to ask.
Yeah. No, I think that is really critical. And metrics definitely is a bit of a buzzword in the space.
Hey, everyone. We hope you're enjoying the conversation. We want this podcast to be in the ears of as many people as possible, but we can't do this alone. Would you do us a big favor and write us a review on whichever podcast platform you prefer? It takes just a couple of minutes and makes a huge difference. We can't thank you enough.
So tell me your most either recent or favorite project that you funded.
Yeah. So great. I mean, it's just so hard. There's not a favorite one.
How many do you do a year?
I can't tell you how many favorites we have. We would actually do close to 300 grants a year.
Oh, wow.
And we would be working with organizations in a lot of other ways that would help them fulfill their mission, with coaching or with a workshop on how to raise money and, you know, those kinds of things.
So but maybe just a more
I'll
recent
give you
one.
Let me give you some examples out of several different spheres.
Perfect.
So there's a group in Idaho that provides shoes for kids in international settings, that the shoe is an expandable shoe. So the kids, as they grow, they can mm-hmm. expand their shoe and continue to have shoes. And they needed someone to help them basically coordinate, because their partnership with schools and churches and missions organizations, et cetera, abroad was growing so rapidly. They had to have someone to help. So we were able to help them in the planning of a new position that helped them expand their capacity to serve the constituencies. So they've done that. They've faithfully done that, and it's an amazing kind of a thing. There was, in the environmental setting, there was a group in Alaska, a dam that had for many years blocked a key river for salmon runs, that also was a key part of a whole tribal group that was along that river, that the river was a critical part of their story. We were involved and made a grant that helped this dam, which was not helpful anymore. The dam to be taken down, the river to be restored, the salmon run to be restored. And in a sense, the thriving of a community of people all along that river to be restored and mm-hmm. brought back to life. An incredible kind of a thing. I think of a group, I'll give you an example, would be the Alpha group.
Sure.
So Alpha recognized that their videos that they used were dated and that they really needed to, in a sense, completely change their videos to tell the story that is key to the Alpha curriculum in a way that's more winsome and more compelling. So we made a grant to Alpha as they redid all those videos and that are now in use worldwide. And they're fantastic. And
Alpha is taking off. It's really, really fun to watch.
Just really an amazing thing. So we're in conversation with Alpha about a new kind of a thing. So those are some groups. Those are some small groups, some big groups. Probably a group near you,
right.
Wherever you are. If you're in Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, British Columbia, I'll give you another great example that many people have probably seen the film about the Rajneeshis out in Antelope, Oregon. And the fact that camp was taken and put to use now by Young Life. So we just made a grant to the Young Life camp. One of the key things out there is they had the very old antiquated water purification system for the whole camp.
Yeah.
We made a grant that helped them put in a whole new water purification to serve the camp and the expansion and the future in a significant way. That's not a very glamorous grant. Not very many folks get their name put on the Murdoch water filtration system. We don't really care about those kinds of things. But what we do like to say is that we don't mind doing septic systems. We don't mind doing things that serve the capacity of a camp so that the camp can fulfill its mission in a more effective way. And so, you don't have a great camp if you don't have a great septic system or a great water filtration system.
It could go real bad real fast.
That's right, yeah. I mean, all of us have slept in bad camp cabins, And so we've been involved with a lot of camps, both faith-based camps, Boy Scout camps, other camps all across the Northwest.
Yeah.
Because we know that outdoor experience, getting away from our settings, is so critical. All of us need that. So that's just one of the areas that we work in.
Well, I think Jack would be very proud, right, to know that what he started at Tetronix is being used in so many different ways. Steve, I know that you've had definitely an interest here in Portland with the kind of the city movement that's happened here over the last 10 or so years. And what's the reason that you kind of spend your time in this space, and what is that motivator for you?
Yeah.
Personally and maybe professionally,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we live in Portland. That's one. And our offices are in Vancouver. So the Portland,
Vancouver, Washington.
Uh-huh. The metro area is home. And so we care about where we live. We care about our neighbors. We care about who we're with. So and we want the city to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And we want the people in the city to flourish. And so that's part of, what we're always seeking and working toward. And one of the great things we were involved with and that Plow had the vision is to recognize that, again, people wanted to serve their city. They just needed a tangible way to do it.
Right.
So the City Serve was really that step that brought churches together, brought people out. Very tangible way to say, we love you, Portland, Vancouver, and surrounding area. We love you. We want to serve. We want people to flourish. And so that was an incredible step forward. And the thing that we realized is that is an important way for the church in the cultural moment that we're in to be present. And it's by our working together. It's by the tangible acts of service. But it's also by interpreting why we do what we do. you know, an uninterpreted life is a life easily misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. And I so like that line.
We have to give some interpretation to what we do. But we're not trying to cram anything down anybody's throat. We're trying to, you know, just really be faithful at blessing the worlds in which we live in. And so I think that's been it. And, you know, one of the great things that we've been having conversation about lately, and, you know, we stand on the shoulders of people that have been thinking and working on this in so many different ways. And I think of some of those early leaders that, in a sense, came around Luis. And part of Luis's idea was to live and be in the city that he mm-hmm. lived in, mm-hmm. not to just fly out and do things, but to actually seek to be redemptive in his city. And so business people and other people that are way under-talked about that really came That's together right. and said, let's make this. And so today, Rick McKinley, John Mark Comer, I mean, you can name a number of pastors. You can name a number of lay people, Dave Bartz, Barbara, Jeff, John. I can name a whole host of those that have come together to really say, how can we come together and really do this in a way that is winsome, that is serving, and that, in a sense, we're part of the fabric of the life and health of the community.
Yeah, it is really special when you can find those people that are from those different sectors of society
yeah.
to come around a common goal.
Yeah.
And that is really what our city movement leaders are trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
What's one thing that you would say, like knowing that there's an audience of people out there who are doing this kind of work in their cities, that it's often underserved in the sense of they tend to be loners, not having a huge staff. Mm-hmm. Just from your position, just as, you know, having done work in your own city, but also as the executive director of yeah. Murdoch, what would be kind of your piece of advice to them?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it is very important. I would actually say two things. One is, don't go it alone. Look for both the usual kind of collaborations, but look for unusual collaborations. Hmm. You know, one of the incredible kinds of story, part of the Plow story, is the unique relationship between Kevin and Sam Adams and, mm-hmm. and Rick McKinley and others. And I think that's an unusual collaboration, not one that you'd go say, this is predictable. No,
right.
I wasn't
Sam
predictable
Adams
at all.
Sam Adams being Portland's first openly gay mayor
yeah.
and
yeah.
the president of a evangelical association
yeah.
becoming friends.
Exactly.
And great friends to this day.
And saying, we may not agree on everything, but there are things we can agree on that will help our city. And let's work toward those. So, you know, be aware, look for those unusual collaborations. The other is, though, is to be in partnership. Look for partners. Every organization doesn't have to do everything itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the great things that I see in some organization is their ability to develop what we would call loose partnerships. It's kind of, you know, saying we don't have to have all of these talents. There are young filmmakers that want to work in the city. Let's bring them in to help us tell our story. Mm-hmm. Let's bring them in those kind of way. There are young tech entrepreneurs that are trying to make it. Let's help them. There are young business leaders trying to help young people from underrepresented groups to get internships. Let's come together and help those internships be present and available. There's foster children that need homes. We can find homes for these foster children if we partner and work together, like
yeah.
Embrace Oregon
That's
has
right.
done. So,
yeah. No, those are good words. Steve, I know you mentioned the advice from your dad, which I thought was great, about the shower. What else? What else has been really impactful to you over the years? What's something that you've kind of lived by?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the important things that I have had to both learn and to constantly be reminded and live by is that, in fact, it's our brokenness, it's our wounds, it's our scars, it's the imperfections of who we are that, in fact, God redeems and uses in ways that we never expected. We tend to want to hide.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to want to not be transparent in that kind of a way. I think that's a one amazing kingdom value that we often neglect. There's a group of guys at an organization called Leadership Catalyst. Bruce McNichols, Bill Thrall, John, those, they're terrific guys. I think I would encourage everyone to read a book, True Faced, because it just, it, there's a certain kind of a power that comes from just bringing all of who we are to what we do.
Yeah, our whole identity.
Yeah, and I think that's a real important kind of thing. The second is, I would say, the principle that really all God asks of us is that we give as much of ourself as we understand to as much of Him as we understand, and that we keep on doing that as we grow to understand ourselves better, as we grow to understand Him better. And so that principle, I think, we probably have overemphasized at times, saying, just make this one decision and then get on with the rest of your life. But it's not that. It often is one big decision, but it sometimes is not. Sometimes it's a series of decisions that we make. And even looking back, we realize how critical those small moments, small decisions, small choices that we made add up to make us who we are. And so I think being good stewards of our pain as well as our successes, I think is a really critical kind of a piece. And then I think just the reality, we don't make it alone. We're meant to, you know, be in community. We're meant to live in that kind of way. Throughout my life, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was when I was coming out of seminary. One of my professors said to me, wherever you end up, start a small group. Get in a small group.
Interesting.
Have a small group. Keep that small group going. It will nourish your soul in ways that you won't imagine, and it will make a difference. And so throughout my life, I would say small groups have been the most important kind of thing for my wife, for me, for us, for our family. I'm in a small group now. It's got an unusual collection of people.
It's always the best.
And it's really fantastic. We see things, but everyone's committed to each other, and everyone supports, encourages, prays, and that kind of thing for each other. I just think it's so critical. I've got a group of guys that I've been friends with now for, you know, 30 years. And I know that those guys, even though we don't meet on a regular basis, we talk and communicate regularly. I know that they're in it with me. I know that they believe. Some of them are godparents to my children, you know, so we know that we're in it together. It's about relationships. You know, relationships are the currency that are a part of God's economy.
I think that is so true. And it's such a beautiful word to end on, because that really is, at the end of the day, all the work that we do, whether it's for-profit, nonprofit, in the city, not, it is about the relationships and fostering those relationships to the best that we can to bring the most life out of them. So, Steve, thank you so much for being with us today. And what a great mix of just kind of hearing from a professional perspective and just your heart and what God calls us to. So thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you. I just thank you, for one, for creating the space for the conversation. And thank you for all that you do in helping this mission come to life. It's an honor and a privilege to get to be a part.
Oh, thank you. And it is an honor and privilege to just be a part of what God's wanting to do, right?
We at the Luis Palau Association are so excited to support gospel movements as they elevate the conversation on evangelism in their city. One of the ways we're doing that is by creating short resources that are conversation starters around evangelism. Check out citygospelmovements.org to access a free resource called Elevate the Conversation on Evangelism in Your City. In this short PDF, we talk about what led us to start an evangelism team in Portland, Oregon. We're honest about the practical reasons why we started a team and about the theological reasons that motivated our conviction. You'll also understand the steps we took to form an evangelism team and read a step-by-step guide to form an evangelism team in your area. Again, that resource is called Elevate the Conversation on Evangelism in Your City, and you'll find it at citygospelmovements.org. If you benefited at all from this podcast episode, spread the love by taking a screenshot and sharing your pic on social media using the hashtag #CityGospelMovement. Personal recommendations are everything when considering a new resource. Your screenshot helps your friends know they should check out the City Gospel Movement's podcast. And hey, you may even realize there are more people than you thought interested in city transformation.
And if you have topics or questions you'd like us to focus on in future podcasts, let us know by going to citygospelmovements.org. We want to hear from you. Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.